Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 6, 2018. The government of South Sudan responds to a Sentry report accusing top South Sudanese officials, including the country's first lady, of benefiting from the conflict.
Enough is an organization which was set up in order to tarnish the image of the president and his family, the government and the people of South Sudan.
And Oxfam says the country's economic crisis is affecting families.
The communities that we work with on the ground, when we speak to them, need assistance at this moment in time. But what they really want is the peace to be able to return home and to plant and to harvest their own food and support themselves and their families instead of relying on assistance.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan government spokesman and information minister Michael Makui is dismissing the Sentry report released yesterday implicating top South Sudanese officials who are benefiting from conflict, including South Sudan's First Lady Mary Ayen Mayardit. Makui says the report is meant to tarnish the image of the family of President Kiir. The Sentry report says $80 million from oil proceeds were paid to top government officials who own companies providing services to the South Sudan Army.
Well, of course, Bentley, this is a very clear case of defamation, because ENAF is an organization which was set up in order to tarnish the image of the president and his family, the government and the people of South Sudan. All that appeared in that report are unacceptable, they are not true, they are just lies. This is what President Trump refers to as fake lies or fake news.
Mr. Minister, I think the authors of this report, they stand by this report, and they said that their findings can be substantiated. So let me give you one key finding here. It says more than $80 million was recorded as paid to South Sudanese politicians, military officials, government agencies. One of the people named there is the First Lady Mary Ayen Mayardit. Reportedly received
that
six
is,
payments beginning
if,
in April 2014
for
army logistics and transportation
and
military
amounts.
Hardware.
Then,
what do you say to
why
that?
Why should we be in this crisis now? These are the reports which I say they are actually meant to tarnish the image of the president and his family. These are and we know the source of all these informations. Even ENAF is becoming corrupt. It is becoming corrupt because ENAF is not that ENAF which we know earlier. So all these are issues which are meant to tarnish the image of the First Lady.
They are recommending at least targeting.
Do you agree with me
key members
that he
of the government
the pipe
who are apparently involved or allegedly involved in this practice, mean setting up these companies and through which money is paid to fuel the military movement, the war? They're recommending going after those individuals.
These are all these tactics meant to, in order to fail the government, to tell the people that this government is destroying your wealth. This government is doing what? This government is doing this. After all, if you have been following the prices of oil in the market earlier, did we really have that enough which can make us to pay that this huge amount to everybody? And if people are being paid, if it is being paid to the politicians and the army commanders, why were I not paid?
So, Minister, so this is a denial that your government is saying that this did not,
it's not a
all
denial.
The information
it is
included
not a denial.
In this report,
it is a statement of fact.
It's not true.
It is a statement of fact. It is not a denial.
Individuals in your government do not use oil money to for personal gains and also to help fuel the war process.
These reports are not new, because fire reports are being written by so many players who have decided to be the monitors and do what and write whatever nonsense they want to write about the government of South Sudan.
Was your government informed or given a copy of this report?
We are not yet informed, but I'm responding to what I'm hearing from you.
So your government isn't concerned about possible financial sanctions on your government or individuals connected with your government
if this is found to be true? If the American government is already out to ensure that the government of South Sudan is made to fail by any possible means, this is a clear thing. We know it very well. So whatever sanctions that the Americans are out to do, they are already on the way. So there is nothing new.
Well, I think what everybody wants is for the leadership in South Sudan to do everything possible to end the conflict there.
Who is that, everybody? Is the American approach the right way in order to bring the conflict to an end in South Sudan? In fact, they are fueling the war more than any other person. And it is because of their declaration before we went for the peace talks that made the rebels to be intransigent and not listening to the government, not listening to the peace talks and not ready for any peace to be achieved in South Sudan, because they have been made to believe that this system is going, it is collapsing, and as such, don't waste time with them.
Isn't it true that your government did not, at the recent talks in Addis Ababa, that there was a disagreement between your government and the rebels? So I don't think it's fair to blame the international community.
It is the international community, because it is they who were behind all this. They were on the driving seat. The parties were not left alone to decide for themselves.
That's Michael Makuei, South Sudan government spokesman and information minister. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today from Juba. The UN Refugee Agency says survey results found 44% of refugee children under the age of 5 who are mainly from Sudan suffer from growth retardation or stunting. UNHCR assessed children in 8 camps for Sudanese and Congolese refugees across South Sudan in December 2017. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Terry Teuri is the UNHCR Nutrition and Food Security Officer in South Sudan. She says the recent survey revealed that a large number of refugee children under the age of 5 years old suffer from acute malnutrition.
The average across the camps is 6.2% at the moment. And in addition to this, we also have the other forms of malnutrition, that's stunting and anemia.
Teori says although the number of malnourished children is below the World Health Organization's emergency threshold of 15%, the survey shows refugee children in South Sudan have a poor nutrition status. The survey also revealed that 26,000 refugee children suffer from anemia. Teori says stunting and anemia can have long-term negative consequences for children and affect children's immune system as well as intellectual capacity and mental development.
The problems that we have is that our livelihood programs are very minimal, and we rely mostly on the general food distribution and the blanket supplementary food feeding for food assistance. You find this is just able to provide the very, very basics. It's not able to cover issues around the diversity, issues around the micronutrient deficiencies. So you will find children get treated and they get cured, but then the prevalence of getting malnourished again is always there. So unless we are able to tackle the underlying causes of malnutrition, then we keep going through this cyclic situation where, you know, after they are treated, they are prone to getting infected and malnourished again.
UNHCR says funding gaps is to blame for the malnutrition among refugee children. The agency is asking for $78 million from donors to address the malnutrition deficiency among the refugees.
We need funding that is able to take care of the food assistance. We need funding in terms of being able to expand the livelihood program to be able to cater for a bigger percentage than is able to cover at the moment, which is, not even a quarter of the population. So we need to expand the livelihood programs also to be able to consequently see the underlying causes of malnutrition being tackled.
Teori says UNHCR is working with other agencies, including the Children's Agency UNICEF and the World Food Programme, to address the problem of malnutrition among refugee children. In a bid to prevent malnutrition, aid agency work to provide treatment for all identified malnourished children and created what is called a blanket supplementary feeding program for children under 2 years old, as well as pregnant and lactating women. Teori says UNHCR and other aid agencies have also organized awareness-raising sessions aimed at promoting early initiation of breastfeeding and appropriate infant and young children feeding practices. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The British charity Oxfam says the continuing conflict across South Sudan is having a negative impact on the country's economy. Oxfam says food insecurity and violence have a vicious and reinforcing cycle in South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
An Oxfam official says the continuous call for humanitarian aid in South Sudan is not the solution for addressing widespread hunger across the country. Elizabeth White, Oxfam's campaign and policy manager in South Sudan, says the charity wants to bring to the attention of the international community to understand that South Sudanese need peace.
The communities that we work with on the ground, when we speak to them, need aid, need assistance at this moment in time, but what they really want is the peace to be able to return home and to plant and to harvest their own food and support themselves and their families instead of relying on assistance.
2 weeks ago, UNICEF, the World Food Programme and the FAO, along with the South Sudan government, published the Integrated Food Security First Classification, or IPC report, which concludes that unless there is sustained humanitarian assistance and unhindered access, more than 7 million people in South Sudan could become severely food insecure in the coming months. White says even though the IPC report highlights how millions of people are faced with food insecurity, it does not reflect the full extent of the country's needs. She points out that anyone who suffers from emergency food insecurity depends on humanitarian aid to some extent.
The situation is getting worse, even though there hasn't been a famine declaration this year so far. There are 1.3 million more people facing severe hunger and in need of assistance to address that at this time of year compared to the same time last year when famine was declared. The second was to help donors understand better how to respond to the needs that are part of hunger.
The Oxfam says the continuing fighting and displacement disrupts planting and harvests. Oxfam further says a rapidly depreciating South Sudanese pound combined with conflict-related disruptions to markets have led to an increase in transportation costs of commercial foods in the markets across South Sudan. Marielle Awoh is a professor of economics at the University of Juba. He says the conflict has affected many South Sudanese.
If the war doesn't stop, many people will go to the camps with the main cause of hunger. People move to the camps and they stop producing food for themselves, and that will worsen the situation. Yeah, if people don't go back to farming, you know, if they are not free, they are not safe to farm, then we expect the worst to come.
Awoh says the fighting, coupled with a lack of infrastructure for transporting food from places like Renk in the Upper Nile region, means that people living in places like Renk will have an even tougher time getting a hold of food. 4 million people have been displaced across South Sudan, with 2 million others seeking refuge in neighboring countries. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the struggle to abolish FGM in Kenya. That story is coming up after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of bad manners?
Lack of respect. These days, children don't respect elders. They can insult them. Sometimes even they cannot feel like greeting them, which is not good. Careless language.
Well, I will talk about bad manners. Bad manners to me is relative, because what is bad to me may not be bad to you. As in, what people consider as bad manners depend on their own values.
When we talk about the bad manners, this is the behaviors in the society which is not allowed in the community, for example.
Anything that doesn't speak of you in the right way, like somebody who is not properly trained.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about Lassa fever. The World Health Organization reports it is teaming up with national and international agencies to tackle what appears to be the largest outbreak of Lassa fever in Nigeria. The latest figures show 1,081 suspected cases of the disease, including 90 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports 317 of more than 1,000 suspected cases of Lassa fever have been confirmed during the past 8 weeks. It says the number is more than the 305 cases reported all of last year, making this the biggest Lassa fever outbreak in Nigeria to date. While the disease is present in 17 Nigerian states, WHO reports it is largely concentrated in the three southern states of Edo, Ondo, and Ebonyi. Lassa fever is endemic in Nigeria, as it is in a number of West African states. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says investigations are going on to find out why this year's outbreak is so extensive.
WHO is helping to coordinate health actors and is joining rapid risk assessment teams traveling to hotspots to investigate the outbreak. WHO is supporting Lassa Fever Emergency Operations Center, that is led by the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, to revise the Lassa Fever Incident Action Plan and to strengthen surveillance, infection prevention control and treatment, as well as better coordination and conducting Lassa Fever research and development.
Lassa Fever is an acute viral hemorrhagic illness that occurs in West Africa. The virus is transmitted to humans via contact with food or household items contaminated with rodent urine or feces. Jazarevich tells VOA the virus also can be spread between humans.
Once a person is infected, can infect other people, just like Ebola was through the contact with body fluids. So mainly that would be the healthcare workers who are not properly trained and who are not properly equipped, who may then get infected inside the healthcare facilities.
The incubation period of Lassa fever ranges from 6 to 21 days. The WHO says the best way to prevent the disease is by promoting good community hygiene to discourage rodents that spread the disease from entering homes. Besides storing grain and other foodstuffs in rodent-proof containers, the WHO suggests keeping cats in the home is a good idea. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, activists in Kenya are working very hard to outlaw the female genital mutilation. Rahel Ombur has more from Nairobi.
Female genital mutilation in Africa is an age-old tradition that involves the cutting of the clitoris of young girls and women. The United Nations estimates at least 200 million girls and women have undergone some form of FGM, including 44 million aged 14 years and younger. 50-year-old Rama Wako underwent the cut at the age of 6.
Nilifanyiwa nikiwa na 6 years, ndo nilifanyiwa hiyo kitendo, nilikatwa.
Rama says she was cut and sewn at the age of 6 and explained they used a hot iron rod to hit the place where they cut. And it took 40 days to heal. She says for those 40 days, she could not go to the toilet properly. And if she lives to be 100 years old, she will remember the ordeal. 6 years later, her parents married her to a 70-year-old man. She says the experience was horrific. She delivered twins 9 months later in a near-death experience. Rama says the babies tore her like a piece of cloth because during the FGM, they had sewn her up so tight. She says she required 28 stitches after the birth to heal the wound. After 6 months, Rama was pregnant again with twins. She says she decided to leave her home. She filed for divorce, won the case, and had custody of her 4 children. She swore never to become anyone's wife again and to become an anti-FGM campaigner. Rama says she was an outcast in her community, fighting against her own culture, and that gave her energy to fight for girls. She says she has prevented many girls from undergoing the cut and suffering all she had experienced. Rama has rescued hundreds of girls from undergoing the cut. She travels to areas where the practice is most prevalent. She says more people are starting to slowly shun the practice. The 2016 UNICEF report said girls and women in 30 countries have been subjected to FGM, more than half from Indonesia, Egypt, and Ethiopia. In Kenya, 3% of girls under age 15 have been subjected to female genital mutilation. The practice was outlawed in the country in 2001. Those found to be performing FGM can be imprisoned for up to 3 years. The practice is usually performed by people who are not trained medical professionals, posing risk of death from excessive bleeding or infection. Later, FGM can cause intense pain during sexual intercourse and complications during deliveries. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move back to Juba, where teachers are saying food shortages have affected school attendance in the town. The UN World Food Programme says it is working with education officials to provide food to 380,000 children in 600 schools across South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this story for VOA from Juba.
It is lunchtime at Juba One Girls Primary School. A female teacher walks into Primary 2 classrooms to organize the class so that the children can be given food provided by World Food Programme. 10 girls from the upper classes help carry a white basket full of boiled grains and lentils from the kitchen to the classrooms. Each pupil is served at her desk because there is no cafeteria to serve the more than 200 pupils at Juba One Girls Primary School. It is part of the school feeding program aimed at keeping children in school. Last Thursday, government and UN officials gathered with school children here to mark the Africa Day of School Feeding under the theme Realizing the African Child's Full Potential Through Effective Homegrown School Feeding. Some children at Juba One Girls Primary say the food they receive at school motivates them to attend classes and stay in school as they try to realize their dreams of attaining an education.
When my home is far, when I'm coming, they will give us food, something like food. And when we are reading, we can read very well. That World Food helping us about food. When I eat food at school, I will feel okay and I will feel right. I will write very well.
Sometimes I will come without money. So I will feel, when I'm hungry, I cannot attend the lesson. I will sleep or I'm feeling sick. So when the World Food came with their work, they feed us. They can cook for us, we can eat. Some people, they did not come with money. So they can eat from here. When they went home, some people, they didn't cook even. So they will sleep with whatever they cook to us here.
The school feeding program tries to ensure that children have at least one meal at school and have the opportunity to learn and advance. Said Jabalon is an English teacher at Juba One Boys Primary School, which also receives food from WFP.
We never dream about this for a long time. We never dream about this feeding for a long time. It become unexpected. And will benefit the children because some of them will come. They are coming always without anything. When they take this, they will satisfy and be active and even they will not get any problem.
The headmistress of Juba One Preschool, Ludia Sadia Nasona, says high school has no school feeding program, so it is becoming increasingly difficult to keep children on empty stomach focused during lessons. Nasona says many children have little to eat at home and come to school already hungry and weak.
Most of children drop. They are struggling to get food, but the money is not enough to buy food.
Most of the children drop, Nasona says. She says the parents are struggling to get food, but the money is not enough to buy food. Nasona says children sometimes come to school when they look physically sick. Some even vomit or have diarrhea because of hunger. She says the situation in Juba is now very difficult. Nasona says children are suffering, and even teachers themselves are also suffering. Jesser Wood is WFP's deputy head of program in South Sudan. He says his agency wants to reach more than 380,000 children across South Sudan with school food.
The presence of school meals in South Sudan and in other places is an incentive for children to attend school, which we discussed already today. Even here in South Sudan, while children have been affected by conflict, livelihoods of their families have been disrupted, and people are trying to find a way to come back to normalcy. This often has an impact on children's attendance. When a school meal is provided, this gives families the opportunity to allow their children to attend school rather than undertaking other activities to try to support the family. It gives children the energy they need to concentrate in school and improve their educational achievement, and hopefully to stay in school for a longer period.
WFP's homegrown school feeding program emphasizes local procurement and production by encouraging schools and local farmers to grow their food, which can be bought and supplied to schools. Panter Aler Akwe, the country director for SADO, is Smile Again Africa organization, which supplies schools with food, says since the feeding program began 3 months ago, both school enrollment and attendance has improved.
In a span of 1 month alone, we saw figures increasing from 27,302 to 29,600 school children between October and November 2017. This translates to a consumption of 168.945 metric tons of assorted food items in those 2 months.
Some teachers say although the food is not extremely nutritious enough, it is still better than having hungry children in class who in most cases are unable to pay attention to the teachers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
That report by Dimo from Juba brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Nyanthin Wanjok by Aleu Bol Deng. We've been listening to Aleu Bol Deng with the song Nyanthin Wanjok. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to know what you think about this show. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also look us up on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.